or fear is known. When holidays and holy days and such times come, when anniversaries arrive by calendar or by consciousness, when seasons come as seasons do, old and known but somehow new, when lives are born or people die, when something sacred's sensed in soil or sky, mark the time. Respond with thought or prayer or smile or grief. Let nothing slip between the fingers of the mind. For all these are holy things we will not, cannot find again. Our second reading is by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. In a house which becomes a home, one hands down and another takes up the heritage of mind and heart, laughter and tears, musings and deeds. Love, like a carefully loaded ship, crosses the gulf between the generations. Therefore, we do not neglect the ceremonies of our passage, when we wed, when we die, and when we are blessed with a child, when we depart and when we return, when we plant and when we harvest. Let us build memories in our children, lest they drag out joyless lives, lest they allow treasures to be lost because they have not been given the keys. We live not by things, but by the meanings of things. It is needful to transmit the passwords from generation to generation. This year, Rachel and I spent Thanksgiving with her family. We alternate years, so this was a Rhode Island year. Now, Rachel's family and my family go about Thanksgiving very differently. In fact, they go about most things very differently. But when it comes to Thanksgiving, in my family, the menu is set and the ingredients are bought well in advance. Dishes which can be prepared in advance are prepared days ahead. Everyone has their task, and a timeline is set. The turkey goes into the oven early in the morning, and then we eat around 2 or 3 in the afternoon. In fact, this year when I talked to my mother and my sister, they had done so much cooking on Wednesday that they spent Thursday making pottery. In Rachel's family, by contrast, the menu is basically set ahead of time, but it is not fixed. Ingredients are bought ahead of time to an extent, but there is always some last minute running out to whatever store is open on Thanksgiving Day. Most things are done on the day of. The turkey doesn't go into the oven until 1 p.m. at the earliest, and we don't eat until 6 or 7 at the earliest. This year, on the morning of Thanksgiving Day, while we engaged in the annual search for recipes and the annual attempts to remember how particular dishes are prepared, there was a debate about the potatoes. The rest of the meal is more or less set, and it works well, it's popular, enjoyed by all. But the potatoes, it was felt, have never really been up to snuff. So there we were on Thanksgiving Day, trying to decide what to do about the potatoes this year. Like all holidays, Thanksgiving is in large part about remembering. Supposedly, it is an annual remembrance of a mythical meal shared by the Pilgrims and the Native Americans during the first year of their encounter. But while the details of that story may be largely apocryphal, Thanksgiving is still an act of remembrance. It is a time for gathering with those we see at this time every year. It is time of making the same traditional foods and singing the same traditional songs. And just by its annual recurrence, it invites us to remember where we were last year, and the year before, and the year before. And so many holiday conversations are about that year when, whatever. But of course, this holiday and every holiday are not just about remembering. They are also about letting go. They are also about change and transition. from changing the way we make the potatoes to the change when a child grows up and starts having every other Thanksgiving with her partner's family, from those who no longer appear at our Thanksgiving tables because they have passed away, to the changing circumstances of fortune that impact where the gathering is held and what is served, this is a holiday that is always changing. In my family for many years, my younger sister was the advocate for tradition, opposing any change in the guest list or the menu of any significant holiday. But she, too, eventually grew up, and so it was my sister who brought home the boyfriend who added Mexican mole sauce to one Thanksgiving dinner. While Thanksgiving, like all holidays, is an act of remembering, it also requires acts of letting go, as times and people and circumstances change. I have been thinking recently about memory in the context of letting go and holding on. As human beings, we have rituals for remembering, and we have other rituals for letting go and casting off. But when the rituals are over and we come back to daily life, is it really that simple? Can we just decide what to let go and what to carry? When it comes to memory, it would seem that it is not, in fact, that easy. I would imagine that most of us have had the experience of trying desperately to remember something that seems to be simply gone. Or, for me, the far more frustrating experience of feeling like the thing I am searching my memory for, the word, the conversation, the image, the idea, is actually there, but just out of reach. And I would imagine most of us have had the mirror image experience of wishing desperately that we could forget something that seems indelibly stamped on our memory, a conversation, an image, a moment of profound embarrassment or shame or fear or grief. And try as we might, we can't let it go. It can seem to me that my memory is uncontrollable. Rachel and I have recently done some cleaning out in our apartment, deciding what to throw or give away, and what to keep in various places where stuff had accumulated to the point of overcrowding. Really, do we need a set of twin bed sheets when we don't own a twin bed? It feels like it would be nice to be able to do the same sort of cleaning out and decision-making about our memories. There is only so much room in my head, we might say. Do I really need to hold on to this memory? Can I make more room for memories of love and joy by clearing out some of the memories of drudgery and meaninglessness? But our memories are not that easily controlled. As I was preparing to write this sermon, I listened back to an old episode of Radiolab, which is a public radio program exploring various scientific concepts and ideas. I listened to the episode on memory, and it was fascinating. As it turns out, scientifically, memory is something of a mystery. The program detailed various experiments which found some surprising results. Scientists discovered that administering a drug which keeps the brain from forming new neural connections can stop a memory from being formed. So it would seem that a memory is actually a connection between different parts of the brain. But some years later, a different scientist discovered that if you gave the same drug at the moment that an existing memory was being relived or remembered, the memory could be lessened in intensity or even erased altogether. In other words, the brain is doing the same thing when we remember something as it is when the memory is created in the first place. The memory is not there and static and unchanging, ready to be brought to attention. Rather, our memories are recreated every time we bring them back to mind. Other researchers have shown that memories can be altered or even invented by suggestion, sometimes even unintentional suggestion. The folks on Radiolab pointed out that one of the processes at work in therapy is reinterpreting memories, and that therapy can also involve changing the way we respond when certain memories are triggered. Other researchers have noticed that memories which carry a strong emotional content, either good or bad, tend to be the most durable. On the other hand, some kinds of brain injury or illness tend to erase memories that were created at around the same time without regard to their emotional content. So, for example, certain people with traumatic brain injury report that whole years are just gone, regardless of the emotional content. Still, other research shows that in times of stress so acute it feels life-threatening, such as during a long fall, for example, our memories are recorded in much greater detail, which is why, when we recall the incident, it can seem like it took far longer than it actually did. And other researchers have discovered that music interacts with memory in unique and sometimes quite startling ways that no one really understands yet. What stands out for me in all of this is that even memory, which seems so out of control, is in fact very malleable. It would seem that even in this place of seeming involuntariness, we can still make something of our remembering and our forgetting. Of course, there are illnesses, traumas, and injuries which change the way our brains work and make us either remember or forget in ways that are unusual and harmful. But apart from these experiences, I think we remember most and strongest, longest and best, those things to which we have attached meaning. When I began the process of becoming a minister, I very quickly discovered that I was going to spend the rest of my life being asked to tell my own life story in a very particular way. Those who choose the path of ministry are asked about that decision all the time, by all kinds of people for all kinds of reasons. And in the world outside Unitarian Universalism, the question is often asked as some variation of, "Tell me the story of your call to ministry." And so, in the act of applying to seminary, I began the process of learning to tell that story. I started taking the remembered events of my life and casting them in a particular way to tell that particular story. There are some events in my life that fit very nicely into this narrative framework, and I have gotten very good at telling the story of my journey into ministry. In fact, I have gotten so good at telling this story that I don't really even have to think about it anymore. I even find that when I am newly asked to tell this story in print, I usually do so by finding one of the many other times I have written it down and copying and pasting into the new context. And in the process of crafting a particular kind of story about my own life, I have chosen certain details to leave in and certain details to ignore. And so sometimes I will be in the middle of telling this story, and some other detail that's usually left out will suddenly come back to mind. It will startle me. Wait, right. That is part of how this happened, too. Of course, it's not only the story of my journey into ministry where I noticed this, but in any case of trying to make meaning out of the remembered events of my life. I remember things in order to attach meaning to them, to draw meaning out of them, or to use them to interpret meaning in some other aspect of my life. And I suspect that we all do this about certain parts of our life. When we are remembering something in an active way, rather than it simply springing to mind, we are often doing so in the quest for meaning. And I suspect that this may even be true of those memories that are painful or embarrassing, those memories we believe we would rather not have. I know for myself, the memories that carry the strongest negativity are strong also because they have a certain weight of meaning. My most painful memories are strong precisely because I believe they carry some meaning about myself or my life. Some meaning that I've given them over time, and that I keep giving them with every instance of remembering. And so, in contemplating memory, I come back to the practices and rituals of Thanksgiving. Just as the act of remembering turns out to be an act of recreation, the rituals of Thanksgiving help us to hold on to meaning and identity over time. Rituals are a way of holding on and carrying the memory of a group. They are also a way for individuals to place their own lives into the larger collective life and to find meaning in that way. We too can find rituals for holding on, rituals for carrying on things that are important to us, with rituals for remembering who we are as individuals and as a larger group. The most obvious ritual in most Unitarian Universalist congregations is the lighting of the chalice. But there are other rituals that we perform collectively, and there are ways each of us individually have of holding on to that which is important to us. And at Thanksgiving and at other times, we also need practices of letting go. While we cannot choose simply to forget something, we can decide to change the meaning that something has in our lives. We can stop adding meaning that is harmful whenever we remember a particular event, moment, image, or experience. We can cast off the harmful ways we talk to ourselves about ourselves. We cannot simply stop feeling how we feel about things we remember, but we can stop feeding that inside us which does not serve our well-being. We can, if you will, change how we make the potatoes. In the end, Rachel's brother created a dish of sweet potatoes, apples, and pecans, the pecans which had to be bought at the last moment, that was quite delicious. In this season of holding on and letting go, of release and return, of profound invitation to make new kinds of meaning, may we find the courage to let go of that which we would let go. May we find the strength to hold on to that which we would hold on to. And may we feel the support of this community in all our holding on and letting go. Amen. Please join me in a time of silence.